nurse practitioner prescribing habits, graduation rates and funding, electronic medical records at Walmart, and a look at Macrolide antibiotics. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and we're here again with another episode of The Nursing Show. I would like to encourage all of you to remember that you can check out The Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com. There are articles, links to other resources, studies that are ongoing, and things like that, all available for you that are posted up throughout the course of each week. It's a great place to check in frequently throughout the course of the week for other nursing news and information between the episodes here of The Nursing Show. You can listen to the show while you're there as well, and sign up for The Nursing Show newsletter. That way, I can send you the links from every episode when that episode comes out, making you able to follow up on all the information here. And that's really the best way we can get in touch with you and keep you knowing what's going on here at The Nursing Show. So you can sign up for the newsletter there right at the front page of The Nursing Show website. Speaking of the newsletter, I got a great email back from one of the listeners. Listener Sharon checked back in and really had a great comment. She gets the newsletter delivery to let her know what's going on the website and in the show. And she sent me a great email that said, "I'm an RN for 30 years. I love your show. You have rekindled my love of nursing. Thank you." You know, Sharon, thank you very much for those kind words. It really encourages me to continue on here and keep moving forward with the Nursing Show content and all of the information here. You know, there's a lot of you nurses in various stages of your nursing careers, from students all the way up through nurse practitioners, nurses that are retired. It's just great to hear from you. So remember, you can always get in touch with me in a couple of different ways. You can email me at comments@nursingshow.com, and I always respond to every email I get, so you will hear back from me, and sometimes I'll share your email with the listeners. You can also click on the comments link at the bottom of every single article on the website and leave your comments directly there so that it can be shared with all of the site visitors, and that's a great way to kind of contribute and share discussions with other Nursing Show listeners. So I want to encourage you to keep in touch with The Nursing Show, to follow up at The Nursing Show website, and to keep up with what's going on at nursingshow.com. I'm going to lead off the news today with a look at a recent study that was published in the Journal of Advanced Nursing in their March issue. And it was a study of nurse practitioners and how they seem to have a low awareness level of how marketing by pharmaceutical companies affected their clinical decision making. And definitely, according to the author, quote, creates a conflict of interest. And that's from Dr. Nancy Krieger from William Jewell College in Missouri. Now, the nurse practitioners were clear that some marketing by pharmaceutical companies were more acceptable than others that didn't create as much of a conflict. And there was an example listed in the article, gifts that benefited patients or conferences that were put on and sponsored by the pharmaceutical companies were more acceptable than, you know, a resort vacation or other things that might compromise clinical judgment. Now, this is something that's been studied for some time now in physician prescribing habits, but I don't think there's been a lot of focus on nurse practitioners and their prescribing habits, but clearly there is an influence level there as well. Some of the findings of the survey included that only 5% admitted that they were influenced by pharmaceutical reps that visited their offices. They also said that some of their other nurse practitioner colleagues and physicians were more likely to be influenced than themselves, which I think is interesting because I think we always think we're immune to these types of influences. Two-thirds said that promotional items did not influence their prescribing. Only 1% of them admitted that the promotional items themselves influenced them. Now, this is something that needs to be further studied. There's a lot more details in the statistics that were published in this article, but it's something that we need to be very careful about, and we need to make decisions on our patient care practices based on good medical and nursing research and not be influenced by a pharmaceutical manufacturer, a device manufacturer. You know, we need to use the thing that's best for our patient. And, you know, we need to admit to ourselves that we're as susceptible to human psychology as anyone else is. And marketing is definitely something that will influence us just as much as it influences anyone else. Next up is a look at a college that was rewarded for having an exceptional retention and graduation rate in its nursing program. Harris College in Texas was awarded a state grant from the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board for their great retention and graduation rate in their nursing program. And this is something that's come up before on the show, is how do colleges monitor themselves, or are they monitored for their graduation rates? This came in from a couple of nursing students in the past who were concerned that their school didn't seem to be matching up to other area schools, and they wondered if they'd signed up for the wrong program, I think. You know, this is something that a nursing student should research before they sign up for a nursing school, but quite honestly, you know I made decisions based on my nursing school choice based a lot more on proximity and convenience than on researching their graduation rates. You know, and I think that that's a decision that a lot of people have to make and consider those things as well. But it's nice to see that colleges that are successful in turning out good quality nurses that are able to pass the NCLEX exam are certainly being rewarded, and that's good to see. So I think that it gives an incentive to other schools to up the ante a little bit and try to qualify for these types of programs and grants themselves. Finally, I'm going to look at online health medical records and electronic medical records and Walmart. All right, how did I get Walmart into that picture? Well, I found a great article from the Associated Press. And this is looking at the fact that Walmart is looking to get into this marketplace. They are arguably very spread out throughout the country and are readily available in many marketplaces. And they're going to be partnering with Dell Computer and software eClinical Works to bundle an electronic health records package for doctors. And this is going to be targeted specifically at small practices, small businesses through the Sam's Club discount warehouse program. And they cater to small businesses and communities. And, you know, it's interesting because large hospital organizations and large medical organizations are much more able to defer the cost of setting up their own electronic health records programs in-house. But what's a small office to do? How are they to get into this marketplace and provide these resources for themselves and their patients when they can't afford to hire a programmer or customize a system? Well, Walmart's going to be providing that in this partnership through their Sam's Club programs and make sure that these physicians' offices, and arguably they're going to be nurse practitioners in that program as well, to give them the ability to provide their patients with electronic medical records options that will defray some of these upfront costs of moving into the digital marketplace and allow these small businesses to get involved. Now, they're looking at the cost of getting into this program to upgrade to single health records would be about $124,000 to upgrade their programs. But Walmart believes they can get that down maybe 30 to 50% and get the price down to about $44,000 to move over into electronic health records and in from an office that's already in place. So this is interesting, and it's something that's been a big initiative to try to streamline the healthcare system in this country. And it's interesting to see that Walmart is moving further into the healthcare marketplace. Remember, you can always find links to everything I talk about in these news articles and in the tip of the week at the Nursing Show show notes for this and every other episode. And of course, if you're in the email newsletter, you'll get it sent to you by email every time a show is released. So don't forget to head over and check out nursingshow.com for all of the links and follow-up articles for this newscast. This week, another installment in our ongoing series on antibiotic medications. This week, we're going to look at the macrolides. These are medications that you may have seen commonly, but are not medications you've known and have this classification. Erythromycin is a macrolide, for instance. Also, Zithromax, Biaxin, also macrolide medications. Now, depending on the medication and its dosage, these can either be bactericidal or bacteriostatic. And so, depending on what your goals are for this patient, their dosages may change. So, you'll need to monitor that. And of course, higher doses mean more likely side effect profiles. So again, know what your purposes are, know what the dosing ranges are for each medication. Now, these are medications that are commonly known to have very few side effects. They're not as toxic as other medications in the antibiotic category in most instances. So these medications are sometimes given to patients that have increased risks for other antibiotic reactions. They're generally used for treating, however, just mild to moderate infections. They're not really very strong against some of the more dangerous and severe infection, and that's important. They're effective against both gram-positive and gram-negative cocci, and they are also used to treat some respiratory, sinus infections, GI tract, and also soft tissue infections, as well as some antibiotic related STDs. These medications are also commonly used as prophylactic antibiotic medications for patients who, for instance, have a history of rheumatic fever, valvular diseases, heart diseases, that they may have a resistant infection on board continually. These medications are given to keep the infection down when they have certain procedures, such as a dental procedure, going on. Contraindications and precautions. Well, of course, for any medication, contraindication would be any allergic reaction history. For macrolides, because there's a lot of cross-sensitivity issues, if they've had a problem with another macrolide, if they've had a problem with erythromycin, for instance, they probably shouldn't be taking Biaxin or Zithromax. So again, try to keep an eye on the fact that there might be cross-sensitivity issues. Again, because of people with history of risk for opportunistic infections, if they're taking something like an eye ointment for an ocular infection, they may want to be monitored carefully or indeed contraindicated for administration if they have a risk of additional infections because of killing of the normal flora of the eye. And that's something that I've seen for a couple of different antibiotics. So review your materials for each patient when you're going through these drugs. There are some drug interactions, and so you want to monitor any cross-sensitivity between drugs. Some effects, such as anticoagulant effects, are seen to increase when they get macrolides. So if you've got somebody taking warfarin, for instance, they are going to be at increased risk for bleeding because it will increase the effects of this medication. Also, it can have an effect with some cardiac medications and cause some potentially dangerous arrhythmias or complications when administered with some cardiac meds. So that should be checked as well. Because there's so many meds, I'm not going to mention them all. However, again, digitalis comes up. Digitalis toxicity is a problem with this antibiotic as well. And again, it just increases their DIG level. So it doesn't mean they stop taking it or they don't get this medication, but precaution should be maintained and appropriate patient education is always the key here. Now, as I said earlier, macrolides have a reduced side effect profile, but they do have some that are associated with higher doses and even low doses in some people. And this includes some of the normal GI distress we see with antibiotic administration, as well as some patients actually experiencing some anorexia involved. They may complain of heartburn, perhaps abnormal taste in their mouth. Some people complain of sometimes a metallic taste. There can be increased flatulence and diarrhea, all the GI problems we normally hear about. There is also some ototoxicity, although it's reversible, but they may experience some temporary hearing loss, and they may also have some mild pancreatitis as a result of taking this medication. Generally, these are all reversible and short-acting, so that as the medication is relieved or reduced, the symptoms go away. So again, patients need to be educated about what to look for and how to contact healthcare professionals so that they can get advice. But always with this and every other antibiotic, take the full course unless a certain noted side effects happen, and then they should contact someone to find out whether they should discontinue the medication. There are some limited cases of some liver toxicity. Again, we'll get to some more about that in our nursing considerations. One final side effect. There have been reports in cases of patients that have experienced severe headaches, dizziness, vertigo, sometimes episodes of confusion. So patients should use precautions when driving or operating any heavy equipment until they make sure that they don't have that side effect of this med. And I think that probably is safe after one day's dose of the medication outside of a facility. This medication is affected adversely by stomach acids, so it also needs to be make sure that it's going to be absorbed appropriately. It should be taken 2 hours after or 1 hour before a meal, if possible. And if there are some GI problems, it can be taken with a snack, according to some of the resources I've looked at. So you need to kind of look at your patients and see what best works for them. The medication itself is coated, however, so it should survive passage through the stomach unless there's a lot of stuff in there. And I think that's why there is the restriction on taking this for better absorption during meals. So it should be taken, again, 1 hour before or 2 hours after a meal. Specific nursing considerations. First of all, we talked about patient safety issues. They should use caution when operating equipment if they haven't taken these medications before, or the particular brand of a medication. They should use caution until they know its effects due to the vertigo, dizziness, and confusion side effect problems. Monitoring the patients for liver or renal issues is important if they're in a facility. Also, you want to make sure you're giving the therapy that is most appropriate. So they should have had a culture and sensitivity profile run. If they haven't and it was ordered and was missed, they should run this, because again, this medication is a dose sensitive medication as to whether it's bacteriostatic or bactericidal. So the appropriate dose is very important, as it is in every drug, but in this case, it can either keep an infection going under the radar, or it can kill off the infection. And depending on what the goals of the healthcare team are, that needs to be made aware and make sure the appropriate tests have been conducted. Because IV medications are frequently irritating to the venous system, monitor the patient carefully when giving IV versions of this medication. You know, you really need to watch your IV sites and assess them frequently, both before and after administration of a regular IV dose of this drug. Checking for phlebitis signs, you know, your redness and swelling, tenderness up the arm, proximal to the site of insertion. DIG levels, if available, should be checked and monitored carefully. If the patient's outside of the hospital, again, re-educate them about signs and symptoms of DIG toxicity, as well as relationships to other side effects of the medication, the antibiotic medication specifically. Again, always with an antibiotic, you need to monitor your patients carefully and see if there's improvement. Because of so many superbugs out there, we need to really be careful and look at our patients and see, are they improving on the antibiotic or are they getting worse? And if they're getting worse in the very short term, it may take 24 to 48 hours for the medication to start to work. In the case of IV antibiotics, it's probably a much shorter profile, but if the patient's not getting better, they may need a different, stronger antibiotic. Again, this is useful for moderate to mild, not for severe infection. So if there's signs of an increasing problem or worsening of the infection, this medication should be, the practitioner should be notified so that the med can likely be changed. Always educate your antibiotic patients about signs of allergic reactions. Also, in this case, and in a lot of other cases, things to look for cases of renal or hepatic problems. And again, that's a upper right quadrant pain for the hepatic problems, back pain, back and side pain for renal problems. This has also got some issues with pancreatitis. So, you know, unexplained vomiting, nausea, upper epigastric abdominal pain can all be signs of that. So they should be advised of a number to contact a healthcare provider or a telenursing service that's associated with your facility to get answers to these types of questions. Again, if it's severe, they should call 911 and access emergency services in case of a severe reaction of any kind. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the episode and remind you to follow up on the links in the show notes to get some additional information and provide you the additional resources you need to adapt the general information I give here to your specific area of practice. You know, that's your job. I can only give the general information and overview here. You need to follow your own in-house protocols, direction, and practice guidelines. You can always send in your comments, suggestions, and yes, corrections in here to comments@nursingshow.com. We want to make sure that we get the best possible information out there and the information that you really want to hear. So you need to let us know what it is that we're doing right, wrong, or otherwise. Send in your comments here to comments@nursingshow.com. Don't forget that there are other resources available over at the Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com, so you'll want to check back there frequently throughout the course of each week. And don't forget, share the Nursing Show with one of your colleagues this week. Let other folks know about the Nursing Show. Spread the word. That's it for me. I'm going to close out with some PodSafe music here from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a band called Winter Circle and their song, Streetlight Flicker. If you like what you hear, check out the band's link in the show notes, and don't forget to let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Flicker, flicker. Who knew? Who are you? light.